Welcome to CraftLit, the podcast for crafters who like books. My name is Heather Wardover, and I'm podcasting from my corner of the Sonoran Desert, the Old Pueblo, Tucson, Arizona. Episode 29, Soaring Through California. Well, hello. I send you greetings from lovely Tahoe City, California, where I am attending SOAR's workshop and retreat. And tonight is Wednesday night, and we have finished the workshop portion of the week. And I have seen such amazingly, extraordinarily beautiful things made by hand by people who I have been sitting down and having meals with for the last 4 days. It boggles the mind. I have taken pictures of these things. I hope to God that it comes out well and that you can see what these people have wrought, because it is quite something. I have a couple of exciting things. Pamela, a CraftLit listener, was in my class. So she and I got to bond and we had a great time. She is a midwife from California and she is fabulous. And we just had a great time. We had a really great class in spinning 201, which was, it's not beginning spinning. We all knew how to make our wheels work and we knew how to spin stuff. But we went through, I don't know, a total of more than 10 different fibers that we did 2-ply, 3-ply, 4-ply, 4-ply cable, worsted, woolen, all that stuff. We learned a lot. Other people were doing things like spinning with silk and dyeing silk, spinning stripes, how to spin stripes, and their work was gorgeous. I really hope the picture came out well on that. There was another group that did silk tied weaving. It's like a silk rug, you know, it's a tied knot rug like Persian rugs, but this is with silk. They're doing the knots in silk that they spun, so it's really, really soft and just this amazingly luxurious feel to it, not to mention gorgeous colors, because, you know, silk takes dye really, really nicely. There was a cellulosics class that did all the cellular fibers, flax, hemp, stuff like that, cotton. There was a felting class that did, it almost looks like one-dimensional, well, not one-dimensional, two-dimensional felted scarves and felted art, things like that, that are, 6 feet long and maybe a foot wide, and just, you can't believe how beautiful they were. I'm forgetting something, but there were some other ones. There was a beginning spinning class, which is great, because that means if you are interested, you can come to SOAR and actually learn how to spin. I also understand that if you can't get a wheel here, or if you don't own a wheel, there are people who will bring an extra wheel so that you can borrow one, which is really cool. And that leads me to the next thing I want to say about SOAR. You have heard me say, from time to time, probably more times than just from time to time, that fiber people seem to be really, really neat people. And something about the people who listen to this podcast, whether you're actually doing some craft with fiber, knitting, crocheting, spinning, weaving, or whether you're doing some kind of, you know, painting, some kind of artistic expression in pottery, people who work with their hands just seem to be better than everyone else. And now that I've been in a room with somewhere around 250 other women and men who have taken on this craft as part of their life, I can honestly say, empirically, we're just better. There is no one here who I wouldn't want to sit down and have a meal with. Everyone is spectacular. And especially, and I really want to make sure everybody hears this, the people who put this on, Amy, the editor at Spinoff, Amanda Burka, who's too pregnant to be here, Vicky in sales, Anne, who's the book editor, everyone who's here from Spinoff and Swenson, spectacular people and tireless people. I got a chance to see how much they do behind the scenes just because I had to find Amy to help her with a podcast that Spinoff is going to do. Stephanie Pearl McPhee speaks tomorrow night. They're going to podcast her speech, the question and answer session. And then Amy is going to do a Q&A interview with Stephanie sometime later this weekend. And they've never podcasted before. And obviously I have. This is our 29th episode. So this is not new. So I went over to check out their stuff, but first I had to find them. And these people are all over the place. It's just them. It's just like six people. Is that right? Is there six? Five? Oh my gosh. I think there's only five people who are putting on this entire show for hundreds of spinners. And the thing runs like clockwork. And the food is spectacular, and the desserts are even better. And tonight they had margaritas, so it was even better than that. But I'm absolutely blown away, because not only are these people working their butts off for all of us, they're always happy and cheerful, and they seem to like their job. It's just, it kind of makes you feel good about the world again. It's a really neat thing. So, now that I have empirically stated that we are just better than everyone else, I thought I should tell you a little bit about some emails that I got. First, Kirsten emailed to say that, yes, Will Smith is gorgeous. And I'm so glad you agree with me. I got a really nice, encouraging email from Beth. And Heidi is the elusive H who wrote last week. And I mentioned her letters before, and we went back and forth with various and sundry nicknames that we have embodied over our years on this planet. And my favorite is Heidi's nickname of Madame Lederhosen. I think anytime you can work the word Lederhosen into a sentence, you're really doing well, because there's just something funny about it. It's like the old joke that words that have C's in them are not funny. Words that have K's in them are, like carrot. Carrot is not funny, but kumquat, that's a funny word. Lederhosen is just one of those words. So that gave me a good laugh. I was very happy. I also got a very interesting posting way back at the beginning of October from Nina. And I'm really sorry. I've actually had this email saved waiting for me to talk about this since the beginning of October. And I just kept forgetting. She wrote about the Gandhi Institute work that I had done. And she forwarded a link to a project that Lindsay Obermeyer was doing, the Red Thread Project, which I think another podcast talked about earlier this year. But one of the things that she brought up, that Nina brought up, that I thought was very interesting, was that there's something along the lines of crafters and artists being able to mend the world. And she picked up on this thing called Tikkun Olam, which is in Hebrew, the idea of repairing the world or the earth. Tikkun is to heal, and Olam is the world. And then I did a little bit more study, and the Red Thread Project is very cool. It's the idea that we are all attached. And she has all sorts of different projects where she has attached people to other people, whether it's a sweater that has two bodies and one of the arms are connected together, or the bodies themselves are connected together, or there's the hats with the red thread connecting them together. It's just this idea that we're all in it together, which I think is a really, really neat idea. And the Red Thread Project seems to, although I couldn't find anything on her website to confirm it, I think Nina's onto something, that there's a concept in Judaism, in not just Judaism, but it's right now part of the Reconstructionist movement, but it's also part of the mystical side of Judaism, which, by the way, it's interesting that it's kind of being resurrected by, well, sadly, by Madonna right now, but by a lot of famous people, because a lot of the mystics were killed off in World War II. They were the most pacifistic of the groups that got attacked and probably the least able to cope with what was happening. I think it would have been an enormous shock to their system to see all the hatred, because that's certainly not part of the world of Kabbalah. But the Tikkun Olam story is kind of interesting, and it goes back to, I think it's Isaac Luria and some of his Kabbalistic ideas, and it may actually predate him, I can't remember. But the idea was that when God created the universe, it was kind of this mass. Interestingly, this is an ancient idea, but it kind of fits the whole Big Bang thing, that it was this unstable mass of gas and beauty and stuff. And it was held in a vessel. Some people say it was a pottery vessel. Some people say it was a glass vessel. Some people say it was a crystal vessel. But nonetheless, there's this idea that it was a vessel. And can you hear that my husband is trying to contact me? So this vessel, in trying to hold the beauty and the splendor of God, it shattered. It couldn't do it. Nothing can contain the light of God. And so all these shards of this crystal vessel shattered and went all over the universe. And so you have these bright points of light hidden in all the dark reaches of the universe. And the Kabbalistic view, or at least the way the story is interpreted now, is that, particularly for Jews, but certainly for everyone else, part of our job on the planet is to repair the world, to repair that vessel. It's Jewish stuff is always a metaphor. So none of it's, you know, the literal blah, blah, blah. But it's this idea that by doing good deeds, by following the 613 commandments in the Torah, if you're Orthodox, by trying to make the world a better place, you are fixing the perfection of that vessel. That's Tikkun Olam. And for anyone who has paid attention to all the Kabbalah stuff, you know that one of the things that the Kabbalists, at least the modern ones, believe in is this red thread. You tie it's a red piece of yarn or a red thread around your, I think it's your right wrist, and that's supposed to protect you from the evil eye, which I know sounds funny because that's kind of old-fashioned superstition and stuff, but there it is. My husband's aunt, grandmother, somebody, used to shush people when they would say, "Oh, that's so wonderful," or "Oh, congratulations." She'd be like, "Shh, you don't want the evil eye to see you and find out that something good happened to you and take it away." So this, the Red Thread Project, the Attachment Project, is really interesting, this thing that Lindsay Obermeyer did, and the pictures from it are spectacular. So I'm going to link to that website so that everybody can see it, and I'm going to see if I can play you some audio. I have one interview. I only have one interview, and I don't have a picture of the woman who I interviewed yet, so I have to get a picture of her tomorrow. It's Lindsay. And I was going to interview Pam today, and then I kept forgetting to take out my stupid recorder. It's very strange. I'm not used to, you know, being in a position where I'm around people interesting enough that I'd want to interview them for the podcast, because normally it's just me alone, or it's me with my 6-year-old and my almost 3-year-old. And while I find them remarkable and charming, I don't necessarily want to inflict them on you. So I managed to interview Lindsay, and she's fabulous. She's tiny and hilarious, and I want to be just like her when I grow up. So I'm going to bring you the thing from Lindsay. I've got a couple different tracks that I'm going to play for you. Different things, different sounds, just kind of the ambient noise of Soar, and then some other stuff. And we'll see how the podcast goes. And if I have enough time, maybe I'll even play you a story. I don't know. But I'm working on Henry James for next week. So Let me play some Soar for you.
Well, here I am at Soar. I have checked into my room, and the place is gorgeous. It's called Gralabakken, which means something in another language, and it's really quite remarkable. I'm very, very happy to be here. I've met some really, really wonderful people, and I'm going to try taking this audio recorder with me to see if I can record them. So we'll see what I can get for you while I wander around.
Well, the best laid plans of mice and men, blah, blah, blah. I managed to not do much that first day, but on the second night, I was able to get some dinner conversation, and I actually don't know how much you can be able to hear, but I'll give it a shot.
Better than everybody else. That I'm biased or anything?
Yeah. But we all are pretty wonderful.
And it is also interesting how amazingly computer literate so many knitters and spinners are. Because you don't necessarily think that fiber arts and computer technology would go so closely together.
Well, for me, they don't, but nonetheless, I'm still blogging.
But yeah, you're blogging.
Yes. Blogspot helps a lot.
It's about as engaging as you get.
But when I realized that, that's when I realized that the possibility.
On our third night at SOAR, we had special interest group tables, and there were two full tables, full of bloggers. How cool is that? I need to link to their pages. What am I thinking? I think I'm the only podcaster, but I am far from the only blogger. And some of the bloggers are actually quite well known, and they're here. That's another thing that's very interesting about SOAR. If any of you have ever read Spinoff Magazine or read any books published by Interweave Knits, or even books not published by Interweave Knits, those people who write the books on spinning, yeah, they're here. Alden Amos, the guy who wrote the tome on spinning, it's like, I don't know how many hundreds of pages. It's as big as a Harry Potter book, one of the later ones. It's huge, and it's full of footnotes that I found very amusing, although other people have found them deeply distracting. He's going to be here. Everybody's here. Nancy Bush, who Brenda Dane interviewed a couple of months ago, who does all the sock books. She's here. She's teaching classes. I rubbed elbows with her tonight in the Share Your Project room. Spectacular people. So that's kind of cool. But now I'm going to play you the fun part. I'm going to play you Leslie. And I just dig Leslie. And now you'll see why.
Oh, can you state your name?
Leslie Carroll from Nevada, Missouri.
And Leslie, what's your favorite fleece to spin with a spindle?
Oh, right now I'm spinning Gotland wool, which is endangered species from Sweden.
Oh my God.
It's an absolutely wonderful, silky, long, soft fiber.
Long, like 6 inches?
Yeah, about 4 to 6 inches.
Awesome.
And it's spinning very well.
And can you spin that on a wheel as well?
I'm sure you can. I haven't tried.
And what's your favorite wheel fiber?
My favorite wheel fiber, Shetland wool. I'm going through a Shetland phase. And we have several growers in southwest Missouri that raise some beautiful colored wool. So I've been spinning Shetland. And then I brought some back from the Shetland Islands.
I was just going to ask if you've been to Shetland.
Yes, I was there this summer. And I went all over the island, learning to knit all over again, because I learned to use my long needle and my knitting belt. And we had a wonderful time.
So with your knitting belt, do you use needles that are long and double pointed?
They're double pointed needles, and they're about almost 18 inches long.
Wow.
And I have from double aught to size 4 American needles and they come in fours. Because if you look at your traditional lace patterns, they were done in squares, and you would just, the needle you're knitting on goes in the belt.
Interesting. Now, do they knit Shetland sweaters on knitting belt needles?
You can knit them that way. Most of them do knit them on the long needles, but they're not knitting in the round. They're knitting flat and then on the four needles. Yeah.
And what's your favorite fleece for tapestry weaving?
Well, I use charro, and I will card charro and mohair and do a heavy spindle. I use the Navajo spindle.
Do you have a drum carder for that?
Actually, I use my carder. I do have a drum carder, but mostly I use my...
You're a very brave woman.
No, when I have to use the picker, I'm a very brave woman. Because I don't have a weather apron. I have the Patrick Green carder, which I do use, but I love to do in color on.
How big is your picker?
My picker, well, it's the Patrick Green picker, so it's big size and it has about 4-inch nails on it. So it's an exciting. I had to get a lower table or I was going to hurt myself. I'm only 4'10", folks, so it's a bit of a problem. I'm vertically challenged.
Well, thank you so much. And let's see, what was your most interesting job you've ever had?
Oh, I think the most interesting was working for Bill Cosby. He's the one that sent me back to school and set me on this path of fiber.
Well, we all have Bill to thank for this, Ben. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's right. Leslie Carroll, spinner, knitter, fabulous diminutive person, was sent back to school by Bill Cosby because she worked on his show, The Cosby Show, as a behind-the-scenes person. I think, I can't remember if she said that was when she became the head electrician or if she was just working as a stagehand behind-the-scenes person. But she's just so cool. And here I am. I'm podcasting again. This time it's Friday night because the last 2 days have honestly kicked my butt. I was exhausted today. And yesterday was just a whirlwind. Although if you look at the schedule, you'd wonder why, because it looked like we had all this free time. But I was supposed to help Interweave Knits put up their podcast of Stephanie Pearl McPhee's speech, which sounds like it should be, you know, easy, what with me podcasting all the time, but I had to help them podcast on a PC. I work on a Mac. I'm not one of those Mac people who won't learn PC lingo. I just, you know, if I'm going to work on something all the time, I prefer it to be beautiful. And Macs just make me happy. They're goofy. They're fun. They're easy. Life's too short. So I was working on their PC, which is fine. I know how to run Audacity on a PC. I've run it for my sister. But midway through Stephanie's speech, I noticed that it wasn't auto-saving. And when the speech was over and I stopped it, it immediately jumped to the spinning ball of death. You might be familiar with it. And my stomach just sank because here I am. I'm supposed to be the person who knows what they're doing. And, you know, Audacity is a free program and it's a great program, but it's a free program. And free programs can only be as good as the money you pay for them. You really can't expect more than that. So the data files were saved, but the Audacity file exists nowhere. Allegedly, there is a way to fix this. There's a Wikipedia entry on how to fix this. I am praying actively that this will all work out. But Stephanie Pearl McPhee, I actually have photographic evidence that I was sitting next to Stephanie Pearl McPhee looking really rumpled because it was about 20 degrees in the room and I was wearing 3 layers of clothing. So yes, I still have 25 pounds of baby weight to lose, but no, I don't exactly look like I look in that picture. But I was sitting next to Stephanie while she spoke, and she's wearing the wedding shawl. And I got to sit right next to her while she was standing next to me. And that shawl is a freaking work of art. She should be bragging about that shawl every day for the rest of her life, because that thing is stunning. So that was really fun. Stephanie was, as many of you know, because she's been traveling all the bloody over the country, she's a wonderful speaker. She's a wonderful writer. We all know that. She's very funny. And she's really a wonderful person. And And I felt a little bad because being one of the people who was kind of behind the scenes for a little bit, it was kind of painful to watch all these people who felt like they knew her because they've read her books and her blog. And so they would just kind of come up and say really deeply inappropriate things to her. And that I just felt bad, you know, because we don't actually know her. We know what we've seen of her and we know what we read of her. And those are two totally different things. So I felt bad about that. But I have a feeling she's used to it by now. I'm still popping my peas. Hang on. I don't understand why the peas are popping. Literally the microphone is up at my eyeballs. So I guess I just have very explosive peas. But the other thing I wanted to tell you about, because this looks like it's just going to be a sore podcast, so if you're not interested, I would just say turn it off, because there's not going to be, I'm looking at the time right now, there's not going to be enough time for a story. This morning, Friday morning, I got to take a class with Deb Menz, who wrote the book Color and Spinning, along with many, many other things, DVDs, things like that, to teach you how to dye and blend color. And she talked for about an hour. Oh, what time was it? Maybe an hour, 15, hour and a half. And then she let us loose with a whole lot of dye and whatever fiber we brought. And I really quickly, because I didn't know if I was going to get into her class or not, I really quickly spun 4 skeins, 1 ounce skeins of white-ish Corriedale and Falkland, and there was another one, Corriedale, Falkland, and a Corriedale crossbreed. I spun them up as fast as I can, making what I now know is semi-woolen yarn, and in one case just straight up woolen yarn, because it was a carded roving and I wasn't going to get worsted out of it no matter how hard you tried. I learned a lot. I have pictures of what I did on the blog, so you'll be able to see that, along with a picture of Leslie, which I did finally get, and pictures of me sitting next to Stephanie Pearl McPhee while she spoke. And Amy, the editor of Spinoff, is also in those pictures. I think we're all cracking up in the picture that I'm going to put on the blog. So that gives you an idea of what this has been like. But learned a ton from Deb Menz. She is a powerhouse. This woman, it's like, yes, she does a lot of math. And yes, you have to understand the formulas to make sure that you get your stuff right. I mean, you want to make sure that you get your dyes consistent and at the same level all the time, so that if you have to replicate, you can. And that takes some math. And listen to Math for Knitters, the podcast, and you'll get more comfortable with math. I have. And the really cool thing, though, is she's all about applied math. It's not like math theory. It's, wow, what do I do with this now that I know I need to do math? So it was far less intimidating. And even though I understood the math, we were in a long line of people trying to get their dyes all in a hurry. And so it wound up being a lot of guessing rather than mathematics. But at least I learned the mathematics. The best part, though, was we got to see her samples and the difference between something dyed in stripes and knitted is the difference between, oh, let's say, a watercolor by me and a Monet. And if I can, I'm actually knitting up a sample right now as we speak. I will get a picture of the sample and you will see what I mean, because the roving, just in its dyed state, it's okay, but it's nothing compared to what the knitted up sample looks like. And I am thrilled. The other class I took today was a punch needle embroidery class for spinners. And I don't know if you've ever seen punch needle embroidery. It requires a special tool, a punch needle tool, and some very tight weave muslin, although not heavy muslin, just tight weave. And then you put a design on the back of the muslin and you punch, in our case, I think it was silk yarn, like a very, very thin silk yarn. you punch it through to the other side, making loops on the other side, and those loops become the picture that you're making. Well, as you know, any of you who have been listening to me since the days of Jane Eyre, you know that I am a lousy, lousy embroiderer. I made that crazy quilt for my friend Kim, for her baby, and it almost killed me. Not the crazy quilting. I liked that. It was the embroidery that almost killed me. So it was kind of fun to get to do, in an hour and a half, a really nice little punch needle embroidery thing. Ooh, maybe I can take a picture of that next to my Monet swatch. Ooh, let's see if I can do that. Tomorrow, the classes that I'm taking are card weaving by Sarah Lamb. Oh, the punch needle was by Linda Shellhammer. She's, again, all of these people are really well known in their fields. She lives in Montana. She's fabulous. Tomorrow morning, I'm taking card weaving with Sarah Lamb, which is kind of inkle weaving, but using cards to change the warp and the weft, which is very cool. And then at the end of the day, I'm taking felt soap, where you felt around a bar of soap so that you can wind up with, it's kind of a washcloth and soap all at the same time. And that's done by Sharon Costello, who lives in the middle of nowhere, New York, and can't get podcasts, which is too bad. I did get the links to the blogs of some of the bloggers who I've met here, which is really cool. I'm very happy about that, so I'll be able to link to them. And I also got a little handheld loom, which could be used as a regular loom, but I've rigged a string heddle, like a Navajo string heddle, onto this tiny, tiny little loom, and I'm doing tapestry weaving on it for the first time. And I'm really thrilled about that because I've been interested in tapestry weaving, but I'm not a weaver, and I didn't know how to join colors without leaving a huge gap. And I spent 5 minutes this morning talking to a weaver and a spinner who's here, Alicia Woods, who is awesome. She's an engineer. She lives in Northern California. She works for a pharmaceutical company. I adore her. She is just a whole lot of fun, as is Emily Turner, who I've been hanging with since the beginning of this thing. She lives in North Carolina. You can see that people come from all over, can't you? And 5 minutes with Alicia this morning, and I plotted my tapestry loom. I figured out what I wanted to do. I got the silk thread, or silk yarn. It's kind of a heavyweight yarn that I wanted to use. And I rigged my heddle this afternoon, and I showed her this evening, and she couldn't believe it. I even showed Morgane from Carolina Homespun, who is a doll. I love her. And she was very impressed, because I bought my first book on tapestry weaving tonight, and I've already kind of started. I have a lot more to learn, is what I'm finding out. And that's something that is, I was talking to Emily about at dinner tonight. In the education world, I'm at the top of my game. I'm known for what I do in the circle that I work within, and that feels really good. But, you know, life is process, and life is change, and it's nice to be an expert in a field, but it's really, really wonderful to get thrown into a situation like that, like this, where not only am I not an expert, I am spending my week here learning what I still need to learn. I can teach a beginning spinning class. I could probably teach an intermediate spinning class, but I cannot teach an advanced knitting class or spinning class now. I could teach an advanced knitting class, but not a spinning class. And that's really pleasant, because now I know what I need to know. I need to know what I need to learn next, or I know what I need to learn next. And that's a really neat place to be at 39. You know, you start to feel like, well, life is all that, and I'm heading towards 40 and blah. And it's not true. I'm meeting the most amazing women. Lots of nurses, lots and lots of interesting women, lawyers, doctors. You just, you know, you'd walk down the street and you'd walk right by them, and you'd never know that they were a spinner. And some of them probably like it that way. But there's a lot of joy in creation, and I see a lot of joyful people here, and that's really nice. So on this positive note, as I head off into my Saturday of doing who knows what with card weaving and soap felting, and then Friday, or then Sunday when we have to go home and I have to take an hour-long shuttle to get back to the airport, and God only knows if I'm going to make my plane because it took me 3.5 hours to get the shuttle last time. Don't ask. It's really lousy and boring. I do want to thank the people who wrote me this week. I got a really fun email from Kristen about how gorgeous Will Smith is. I think I already said this. Beth sent me a really nice email. Heidi, the Madame Lederhosen thing. I did already say this. Oh my God. But I got a new one, which is from, they signed as Pancake and Lulu, named their new cats Ambrose and Hawthorne. Ambrose from Ambrose Bierce because of Craft Lit. And Hawthorne, I have to tell you, Nathaniel Hawthorne is one of my favorite writers. And it's kind of prescient that you named your cat Hawthorne, because I'm finding, as I'm studying Henry James for next week, some very, very interesting links between the way Hawthorne writes and the way Henry James writes. Not that it's, you know, ponderous and slow and puritanical, but Hawthorne does some very interesting things with his narrative that I think most people ignore. But they're the same kinds of things that Henry James does. And so I find some very interesting links between the kinds of things we've been listening to the last couple of weeks and what we're about to jump into. I'm very excited. I also wanted to put out, from Amy. Oh, now I see. Amy is actually Pancake and Lulu. Amy had emailed or posted on the blog that she's really enjoying Sleepy Hollow, and that's great. But talking about my son and the school problems and how miserable all of that is. Her 5-year-old is at a Waldorf school. And Amy, I actually do know what a Waldorf school is, and there are some in Tucson. They're not particularly conveniently located. But Waldorf schools are, they're very arts oriented, and they're not the most expensive private schools in the world. And they have a really neat, it's not Montessori, it's a different thing. But if you don't know anything about Waldorf, saying, oh, it's kind of like a Montessori school, as long as you emphasize the kind of, you're close. But just think it's a slower, calmer, gentler educational experience for the children, and one that is deeply centered in the arts and arts education. And Amy, it's true, we've actually been considering sending our 3-year-old to a Waldorf school when he's a little bit older for exactly the reasons that you stated. So if any of you who are listening are parents and are frustrated, terrified, freaked out, nervous about sending your kids off to school, check and see. I think there's a Waldorf school website. Check and see if there's a school in your area. Sometimes there are schools that ascribe to kind of general Waldorf principles but aren't affiliated, and those can sometimes be cheaper. But take a look. They're smart. And Amy, I'm sorry I didn't pick up on the Pancake and Lulu thing. I just wrote down Pancake and Lulu about the Ambrose and Hawthorne name because it says on the comments, Pancake and Lulu said... And then all the way down at the bottom, it says, Amy. I'm going to go work on the blog because it's going to take me a while to put all these pictures up. And Blogspot has not been a friend to me lately. Next week, I promise you, less blather, Henry James. We're going to finally start our next ghost story. And it's going to take us, I think, through the end of the year. And then towards the end of it, we'll start voting for what we want to listen to next. There's been a lot of personal emails that I've been getting about doing an Oz book next. So maybe we'll do some little Frank L. Baum. And for those of you who watch Lost, did you pick up on Ben's name last year? When Ben said he was in a parachute that landed, did you hear who his name was? That's a really stupid way of putting it. He claimed to be Henry Gale. Go back and look at the Oz books and see who Henry Gale is. I love Lost. All right, I'm going to stop blathering. I'm going to go finish my swatches, take a few more pictures, try and get some sleep tonight, and I hope you do too. It's been a long week, and it sounds like it's been a long week for everyone. My family back in Arizona sounds like they've just been having a heck of a time. Maybe it's because I'm not there. I don't know. But I hope you have a really good weekend and a really good week. Thanks for being patient. Thanks for letting me blather about SOAR. I got some more audio, but it's really not worth playing, so I'm not gonna. And if everything goes well, you will be able to go to the Interweave Knits SOAR blog and download the podcast of Stephanie Pearl McPhee's speech. That is, if we can piece the files back together. Because when I recorded the podcast, it freaked out and didn't save the file correctly. So we're hoping it can be fixed by Interweave's tech gurus. I had wanted to play you out with the latest Indigo Girl, well, part of one of the latest Indigo Girls albums. I don't know if you're like me, but I haven't bought the last few albums. They weren't speaking to me anymore. But this last album I would like to have played for you, but I downloaded the file from iTunes and it's copyright protected and I can't import it here. So all I can do is tell you that the Indigo Girls, who my husband went to Emory with, and Amy Ray actually did music for one of my husband's plays when they were in college, they've always held a special spot in my heart. I think they are particularly wonderful people. And really, really spectacular musicians. And I was really happy to hear their latest album because it felt like they were back again. So if you haven't heard their new album, please consider taking a listen. And I wish I could play you out on it, but I can't because I don't have a CD to burn it onto and I can't fix that. And I'm sorry. The blog may not be up for a couple of days because everything is so hectic and it's actually getting very late and I still have to finish my swatches tonight. So if the blog doesn't make it up until next week and you've lasted this long through this podcast, at least you know why. I hope you have a spectacular week and Henry James next week. Thanks again for listening. You can find a blog for this podcast at craftlit.blogspot.com or craftlit.libsyn.com. That's craftlit, C-R-A-F-T-L-I-T, all one word, and Libsyn, L-I-B-S-Y-N. And of course, you can subscribe at iTunes. And do remember, if your hands are too busy to pick up a book, at least you can turn one on.